Good evening and welcome to One Game at a Time, where this week we look at forgotten footy clubs, and they're the ones who had early abandonments or mergers or changes and things that really have just drifted off our radar. If you want to contact us, you can hit us on the Facebook at One Game at a Time or with our Twitter handle, which is at Origins of Footy. And this evening, we have Finn O'Sullivan with us, resident purist and expert.
G'day, gentlemen.
And Ryan Miller, who does a whole lot of things. including laugh, and he looks after our mailbag. And what's in the mailbag this week, Mr. Miller?
So, Stephen Hayes has sent us a message through, I think it's Facebook. He asks, fabulous question, to our obvious historian, genius, and purist, Finn O'Sullivan, directly, because he knows all of the answers to everything. Oh. As we've worked out in the last few episodes, his depth of knowledge just knows no bounds. So Stephen's come straight in with the standard spacing between the two ones on a number 11 Guernsey are approximately how far apart?
Oh, bring on the fastball, mate. 6.4 centimetres.
Now, is that with Times New Roman font? Or sorry, is that the two ones straight down?
Has he just pulled that out of his ass? There's no way that's right.
No, I got no idea.
Oh, good.
But I do know that Guernseys were mandated by the VFL in 1912. So previous to that, possibly numbers were on the back. Possibly they weren't, but they were made to have them in 1912.
Someone's put together an amazing site called footyjumpers.com where you can go all the way back to 1897 and see exactly what your football club's jumper looked like right the way back and fall in love with the old Fitzroy jumper, which is just beautiful, navy blue and maroon, with no logo or anything, just a good, honest V and yoke. I think we'll kick it off with one that I just knew nothing at all about, but the Hotham Football Club started in 1886. Who knows about the Hotham Footy Club?
Well, yeah, it can be linked back to even further than that, because it originally formed as Carlton's second team in 1870. Now, it's pretty obvious that we have a seconds team now and a thirds and a fourth and a fifth, like we're discussing with Melbourne Uni off air. But this was the first time it had been done.
Right.
And we need to put this in perspective. The Hotham Borough, or it's kind of a place near North Melbourne. At the time, this borough and North Melbourne contained places like Royal Park, Carlton Park, Parkville, those types of places. That's how far it went out. This was separate from the North Melbourne Junior Club. So there was a North Melbourne Junior Club, and we need to remember that those junior clubs that we're talking to at this time were simply just the kind of the twos of the day, or the lesser of the players.
Yeah, so worth noting before you go on, Finn, sorry, the VFA senior teams in 1877 are Albert Park, Carlton, East Melbourne, Essendon, Geelong, Hotham, which you're talking about, Melbourne, St Kilda, South Melbourne and West Melbourne, with junior teams, which is like a Division 2, if you like, of Ballarat, Hawthorne, Northcote, Standard, Victorian United, Victorian Railways, and Williamstown.
Yeah, so there's a lot there. And look, this only lasts a year, so by the end of 1870, they disbanded. And North Melbourne juniors were taking over their fixture. So they ended up playing. Hotham re-emerged 1872, and again, this was now separate from Carlton and was playing matches against North Melbourne kind of sporadically. Both united under the Hotham name in 1877. So for the first year of the VFA, they got together. But I think what's important with this is that the suburbs that we know now aren't the suburbs that were existing when these clubs were around. They were much larger places, so they encompassed much more land. So different places had kind of different rivalries. So obviously Carlton, North Melbourne, they were in the same area, if you will. So there was this kind of rivalry between players swapping from different clubs to different clubs.
Okay, so what became of Hotham?
So they became North Melbourne in 1888. And that's actually the same year that the town hall was built and the name of the actual suburb became North Melbourne.
So what's the next one that we're looking at?
We're looking at South Melbourne, but it is not as clear-cut as it would seem. They've kind of gone through a few names, Emerald Hill and Albert Park. I could go through all the stats. What I love with this one is that South Melbourne gets its colours from Albert Park,
right?
Which obviously red and white. So they decided that when Albert Park amalgamated with South Melbourne in 1880, so they decided that, yep, you can take the name of South Melbourne, but we want you guys to keep our colours. We were discussing, I think it was Mr. Miller off air, he asked why they called the Swans, because I thought they were called the Bloods. Mm. Like, they absolutely were called the Bloods until about 1930, where they got a whole influx of players from WA. And of course, the WA's emblem is the Black Swan.
Yes.
And so the media kind of got on the bandwagon of calling them the Swans.
So obviously, a bit of
tongue in cheek,
right.
Not having players from your own from your own backyard, and I found that incredibly interesting that we just take that for granted. That Sydney Swans, it's the harbour, the Swans. Yep, that must be it. Am I the only one that thought that?
No, I thought South Melbourne as well. Like, that's conceivable that
there is water near both places. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
I think it's worth noting that the South Melbourne change really was the first big change to happen at the VFL, that in 1982 they played their first games as the Sydney Football Club, and that the change from South Melbourne was the first big alteration that was started off our national game, and also started things like club owners and the changes that happened around clubs owning players and different things like that.
And I had a bit of a look at why South Melbourne struggled and some other clubs as well, why they'd gone into it, or why they ended up in that situation. The common thread, and we'll talk about this a bit with some of the other clubs, but there's a common thread around the wars causing massive problems for these clubs, like at various times. The wars had a significant effect on, I suppose, the fact that the country's under financial strain.
Player retention.
Exactly. Player retention, young kids going off to war. I suppose shrinking crowds through that time as well. Not everyone, everyone else was struggling for money at that time. And that having a sort of significant effect. That South Melbourne World War II, it seemed to start the rot a little bit. For them, but yeah, when you sort of start looking at a little bit more, it seems as though zoning had a significant effect on South Melbourne. They were linked to Riverina Football League, and I think maybe that was one that certainly wasn't that financially profitable, but also maybe didn't bring in the players that they needed at that time as well. So yeah, look, it's this combination of factors that resulted in them sort of unfortunately going under. And we've seen it recently, and it seems like the AFL at the moment doesn't seem to be a club that's in that situation where they look like going under. But we've seen it in the not too distant past with North Melbourne, obviously, probably most recently, Melbourne, Hawthorn. It could have happened to any of those clubs, really. So it's these perfect storms that seem to have caused the problem in most cases, although some of them have got some pretty weird ones.
I think the influence of World War II is interesting, or both World Wars, is that even foundation clubs like Geelong, and I mean Foundation 1859 Foundation, they were unable to compete in 1942 because, remember, during the war they had travel restrictions. So temporary transfers to other clubs, Geelong players, had to move to other places to play because you couldn't travel, but things like, petrol and those types of things were on restrictions. Melbourne and Collingwood considered amalgamating into a joint team during these periods. The VFA went into recess. The Brownlow Medal was suspended. So there's all these types of factors that influenced clubs either, surviving or not.
Mm. So I took a little look at the Essendon Footy Club, and you might remember from an earlier episode that the Essendon Footy Club ran two footy clubs concurrently. They ran one in the VFL and one in the VFA. the VFA version was defined differently by being called either Essendon Town, Essendon A, or Essendon Association, because Essendon played their home games at the East Melbourne Cricket Club, which is bang next door to the MCG across Yarra Park, pretty much where Jolimont Station is now. And with the extension of Flinders Street Station, that knocked out the line basically to Hurstbridge was to run through the East Melbourne Cricket Club. So Essendon had to find a new place to play. They were going to go and play at Arden Street. They couldn't get that to happen because North Melbourne were in a mess. And so they eventually went back to play at Windy Hill, which is where Essendon A played. And that really just caused the end of the Essendon Association Football Club. They had nowhere to go. And also, the supporters of Essendon would prefer to turn up to watch the VFL club because they played a, you know, more serious, better brand. And so their sort of, you know, poorer brother just became nothing.
And facilities is a big one as well with a lot of these clubs. Like, obviously, Fitzroy being the one that people talk about a lot is the deterioration of a facility that was brilliant for such a long period of time. If you're in a particular suburb and you've got this beautiful ground, suddenly, you know, the governing body are putting massive pressure on you to make sure you can, safely hold 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people. If you can't do that, then you've got to move somewhere else. And for that, you need a lot of money. Yeah. So, facilities is probably one that's undersold a little bit.
And if you speak to a Fitzroy supporter who was there in the sort of 50s and early 60s at Brunswick Street Oval, they say that when Fitzroy had to leave there and go and play at a variety of different places, including South Melbourne and Princes Park and all that, that it ripped the heart out of what was a pretty serious working class community.
Essendon did have a good run. They played 628 matches from 22 to 91. But I want to ask you guys, do you know what the actual name of Windy Hill is?
The Essendon Recreation Reserve.
It is the Essendon Recreation Reserve, and the term Windy Hill was coined by Lou Richards, obviously for its windy reputation, but as he was the columnist for The Sun, it just started to become this, become this name because he was so popular during the mid-50s. So
right.
It was called the Essendon Recreation Reserve, which doesn't have the pizzazz that Windy Hill does.
Well, is that like the WA ground now being called the Boo Factory? It'd just be the way.
I don't know if it's called that.
It is called the Boo Factory. That's,
I don't think it is.
It is. The TVF. I'm pretty sure that's what it's called.
That's good. You delivered that really well. Thanks, Lou, on the Lou Richards one there, he just linking him to another club that obviously went under, he wrote in his autobiography, Boots and All, I think it was 1962, on Fitzroy, highlighted where they're headed for, I'd hate to hazard a guess. I feel the future of Fitzroy is none too secure. They hemmed in between two of the strongest clubs in the league, Collingwood and Carlton. And Lou said that in 1962.
And Richmond just on the other side as well, like, you know.
Exactly right. Yeah, Fitzroy, that's a different reason again. You know, you look at their geographical location and, puts them under enormous pressure.
University, who?
I had a look at university.
Yeah. Melbourne Uni.
Yes, absolutely. Melbourne Uni opened in 1855. They had a football club, pretty strong one by 1859. They didn't mess about. And they played their first match in 1859 against St Kilda. And it was a 15-a-side game, that, just interestingly. Now, I think we tend to look back at those games around the 1850s and before and think of huge numbers of people playing.
Yes.
So when I saw that, that was a bit of a surprise, certainly to me. 15-a-side, I didn't see that one. And the method used for that game was, it was the first to three goals was victorious in that particular game.
And that would have been a rolling ruck, ball sort of scenario.
Yeah, as we've talked about in the past. In the same year, they played against Albert Park, which we've talked about, Carlton, Melbourne, Royal Park, who are another one, South Yarra as well. So university in 1907, jumping on a little bit, was the ninth club to join the AFL. The other founding eight clubs invited them in on the 4th of October in 1907. And they were joined by Richmond 2 weeks later, who were the 10th team. That didn't last a huge amount of time. But yeah, they were part of that first 10 sides, part of the VFL. Now, the club's got some cracking nicknames. So students, professors, you know, you sort of understand that one. You know, I'm sure they were, you know, had a cops and flack for being some of the more educated. In fact, at that time, unless you were enrolled in the university or you held a degree or higher from another university, you weren't allowed to play. So you didn't have to actually be enrolled at Melbourne Uni. You just needed a really flash piece of paper to say you were allowed to play for, you know, university. They played in that black Guernsey with the blue chevron, as it might be called. The other nickname they had was the Shop. Now, I've been since I looked at this, I have no idea what that means. Why they were called the Shop, why that's particularly unique. Now, the other part of this, I suppose, and this comes back to the point we were making about the wars, the First World War was, well, the reason why university didn't survive.
And why was that?
Well, obviously, they you know, 1914... they try to develop the football club as much as they possibly could, but it's just a sheer weight of numbers. Like, there's so many university students who went away to the First World War. They actually lost 251 football players, university students, some of which may have been involved with the football club, but 251 were killed during the First World War. Interestingly, though, they had a backup, because in 1892, similar to what we talked about with Essendon before, they joined the Metropolitan Amateur Football Association. So they started a second team, whilst they had a side, maybe a bit more successfully involved in the VFL. There was another side going around with the amateurs. And this side continued to sort of thrive and prosper. And after the war, the university decided not to reapply for its VFL status, but continued with its amateur status. University A's and B's, as they were called for a while, continued on, and they obviously became University Blues, University Blacks. Yeah, okay, university went under, and for reasons that are not ideal. But
they have a terrible time of it. So in 1908, 09 and 10, they win a few games. I think they win 8 games in their first season, which is fantastic. But after that, they just get thumped. 11, 12, 13 and 14 in those years, they finish on the bottom of the ladder. They don't win any games. Their record, if you measure it up on like total wins and losses, is deplorable. It's sort of 27 wins for 97 losses. And it just, you can't keep turning up on the ground, unless you're St Kilda, of course. You can't keep just turning up and getting thumped every week. And that St Kilda do deal with that and just manage to sort of carry on. But university give it up because they have that option, don't they? They've got a strong amateur affiliation, and they the educated generally aren't necessarily in need of that pay. So I think it suits the amateur, their clientele suits the amateur form of the game.
I think it's worth mentioning that player payments, you know, even though they started in 1911, were certainly way before that, they actively chose to remain an amateur club. So even though obviously the war was a massive factor, that would have been a factor certainly in those last years where they lost 51 consecutive matches into their demise, that choosing to be an amateur club, that's, it's going to have its drawbacks.
Obvious talking point about clubs folding is Gold Coast. You've got to say that Sheed's got it right with GWS. He said, we're going to all be 18-year-olds and live together. We'll live in a compound together, we'll eat together often, and we'll create a tribal family type sense. He learnt from Gold Coast, because Gold Coast seemed to draft pretty poorly, Gary Ablett excluded from that assessment, and the kids all seem to have left and are doing tremendously well. You know, you look at Josh Caddy, Jager O'Meara, etc., are playing very good football, for serious football, for serious football clubs. They to me, it just seems like they weren't organised.
Yeah, there's some danger there. The thing about that makes me a bit more positive about it is I think the NRL and the AFL maybe have worked out that how to prevent these sides from failing. The AFL, you know, what they did with Sydney, they did so well there, and the way they looked after that situation. You know, you just feel like if they want the Gold Coast to do well, I think eventually they will. They've got enough resources to look after them through, you know, maybe a bit of a negative time before they regenerate again.
Because to me, none of it looks good. I don't see, when I watch the Gold Coast play, I don't see any positives at all. And they've got, right now as we speak, Tom Lynch, who looks like he's going elsewhere and he's clearly the most exciting tall forward prospect. They've got him.
Mm.
And they're probably not going to get very much for him. They'll get a round one draft pick and they're going to start again.
I think there's outside factors, obviously. You know, with the AFL taking the punt of the privatisation in Sydney, and then Brisbane coming afterwards. Obviously, West Coast in 87 as well. But, you know, you have to say that the AFL got it right for Adelaide in 91. You know, 93, they're in the preliminary final. They're winning a premiership. I mean, could we not be saying the same for Fremantle?
Yeah, exactly right.
We're not talking about them folding.
No.
I don't see it, though. The clubs you mentioned in South Australia and in Western Australia, they are football traditional places. There's going to be people turn up, pay at the gate, come and watch and be supportive, buy a membership, etc. At the Gold Coast?
They have to
be. For a start, they don't care about anything, that's just already been said. But they've got to drift up to Cairns where 8,000 people turn up because there's nothing else to do.
Mm.
Particularly if the Cowboys aren't playing. To me, none of it seems to smack of success in any way.
And this is the thing, and all the clubs that we've looked at in terms of, you know, folding and when they folded, that pretty much without, you know, question, all of them went through a stage of being terrible and then just dropping off there were other things going on, but then they just drop off a cliff and it's like straw that broke the camel's back.
It's
and
not
that
only
goes,
poor performance, it's also poor attendance.
Yes.
So if you look at Fitzroy, you look at South Melbourne,
yeah,
their attendance is down, their performance is bad,
yeah,
and often administration is deplorable. If you put all those things together for an extended amount of time, it's easier just to say, oh, we can do without you, or we'll find you another home.
Yeah,
which is effectively what happened with Fitzroy.
Just on Fitzroy, if we're going to cheer you up, yeah, we're having a bit of a look. We found a photograph from the 1935 side.
Yes.
In that photograph, there were three Brownlow medalists playing in that side in 1935.
Hayden Button.
Wilfred Chicken Smallhorn. And Dennis Dinny Ryan. All Brownlow medalists, all playing in that side. They finished seventh that year. They're three Brownlow medalists playing in the same team, okay? And they won a lot of Brownlows, by the way, those guys, in the previous, I think, decade. They finished seventh that year, didn't make finals.
Yeah, that's the Dangerfield, yeah. Selwood, Ablett problem. It's three stars don't make finals.
But if you get to that 1935 photograph, you should have it. It is fantastic, this photo.
And that Hayden Button's an amazing fellow. Yeah. He won three Sandover medals as well.
That's true.
What a superstar. Thank you very much for your discussions this evening, gentlemen. Thank you to Ryan.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you to Finn.
Thank you.
And don't get ahead of yourself. Take it one game at a time.
Now, that is interesting. I can't get into it, but it's interesting.